Ha ha. The senses are worth possessing when engaged in the service of the Lord. Actually, devotional service means engaging the senses in the service of the Lord. At the present moment, our senses are not purified. Therefore, our senses are engaged in the service of society, friendship, love, politics, sociology, and so on. However, when the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, one attains bhakti, or devotional service. In the next verse, these matters will be more clearly explained. When one great devotee of Lord Chaitanya saw the Lord, he said that all his desires were fulfilled. He said, "Today everything is auspicious. Today my birthplace and my neighborhood are completely glorified. Today my senses, from my eyes down to my toes, are fortunate. Today my life is successful because I have been able to see the lotus feet that are worshipped by the goddess of fortune." Read the verse again. Maragavacha, tadjanma tamni karmani, tad ayis tan mano vachaha. Ninam yena kivishat ma, sevite hayarishvaraha. The great sage Narada Muni said, "When a living entity is born to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord of God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Controller, his birth, all his spiritual activities, his lifespan, his mind, and his words are all factually perfect." Some people regard the Hare Krishna movement as a movement that observes lots of festivals. It was very auspicious that there was a Rath Yatra cart and a festival on Saturday in the city of Mullumbah. A Muslim cleric, I can't remember his name, gave about a half an hour speech when he was in the United States. He travels all over the world. I can't remember his name, but he was saying that it's very important for the people of the Muslim faith to be integrated into society. He was specifically speaking of the Muslim people who were outside of the Middle East because of the great terrorist activities and because Al-Qaeda is mentioned. He was trying to make the point that most people of the Mohammedan religion aren't terrorists and that they should integrated into society. In this way, he was hoping that people would respect them properly for what they were, for understanding that the Quran doesn't advocate terrorism. I heard one lecture where Prabhupada was saying that there was not a lot of tension, not a great deal of carnage anyway between them. There was always tension, but there was not a great deal of warfare between Hindus and Muslims until 1947 or 48, when the British divided Pakistan and India, and they decided to separate the two according to their wishes. And then there was a great battle, and millions of people died. Prabhupada said that even before this, in one lecture, they had reasonably, at least in Calcutta, reasonably friendly relations between the Hindus and the Mohammedans. He said in one lecture that it was a common thing that, not common, but occasionally, their Mohammedan neighbors would come and visit his home. And that the elders would give the children coins. They had a very kind of friendly relationship. But after separation occurred in about 1947, and there was a lot of tension and rioting took place. And he said this was due primarily to the British rulers. Anyway, I'm not going to dwell on the Bhagavatam because today is a very special day, but these instructions of Narada to the Prachetas are very important. He's explaining to them what devotional service actually is. And it is explained in this chapter that even though they underwent great austerities and penances underwater for a long, long time and took instructions from Lord Shiva, who is the greatest of all Vaishnavas, once they stopped doing their penances, they tended to forget that they were actually devotees of Krishna. So Narada came to re-enlighten them, to understand that they were actually devotees, and he explained to them what devotional service actually was. So today, being Janmasmi, we're celebrating the appearance of Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna's appearance wasn't an ordinary thing, as we all know. And it's been said that Krishna, when he is not physically present, he's still present with his words. Krishna is present in the Hare Krishna mantra, he's present in the Bhagavad Gita, he's present in the deity forms, he's present in the form of his devotees. So we're very fortunate to have books like the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, because it's almost as if Krishna is actually present, because he is present actually, even though he's not physically present. There's some verses in the first canto that describe how Queen Kunti it's the eighth chapter of the first canto. She's praying to always have calamities and miseries heaped upon her because she could remember Krishna better. And then after Krishna left the planet, and after the Yadu dynasty left the planet, she was also trying to remember how important Krishna's words were, because Krishna wasn't physically present. So the idea was that even though Krishna isn't physically present on the earth even now, he can be fully realized by taking shelter of his words in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, and in the devotees, and in the temple, and in the Archivigraha, the deities. Anyway, there's some unique things about Krishna that make him special. It's said that Vishnu is not different from Krishna, Narayana is not different from Krishna, but it's written that Krishna has some unique qualities. He's very beautiful. He's more beautiful than Narayana. He has his special flute playing is very unique and very wonderful. He has uncommon pastimes. He does things that are unique. Krishna married 16,108 wives and created a palace for each one, and was doing a different thing in each palace. That's a pretty unique thing. Krishna is also constantly surrounded by associates. There's a description of the place of Krishna. It's a very big place, and many hundreds, if not thousands, of servants are there serving Krishna. So Krishna has unique qualities. There was a controversy in Delhi because Krishna in the Delhi temple, I think he's still, this color is the color of white, made of white marble. So there was a controversy that Krishna is not white, he's black. So how can this be? And then a letter was written, I think by Prabhupada, to the complainers that Krishna is sometimes described in the Bhagavatam, actually, is described as having the white color, the Shukla color in Sanskrit. And in this letter, he was saying that why cannot Krishna be white? Of course he could be white. And he has this white color not only in New Delhi, but in other temples as well. So these are some of the unique things about Krishna. I thought this morning that I would read something of what I wrote about some of the early Janmasmi festivals when Prabhupada was present on this planet. In the first Janmasmi, there was a half hour of Prabhupada speaking about Krishna, a half hour of chanting japa, and a half hour of kirtan. And then we'd resume another half hour of Krishna's of Prabhupada speaking about Krishna, another half hour of chanting japa, and another half hour of sankirtan. And this would continue on from 6 in the morning until 12 midnight that night. So I'm going to read.
Sorry, what year was that? 67, wasn't it?
The first one was in 1966.
66.
Yeah, so I'm going to read something about this. This is something I wrote. It's from a book called Miracle on the Second Avenue. Some of you have already read this. Today is Janmasmi. This is a quote. Today is Janmasmi, the birth of Krishna. The Swami, that's what we used to call him. The Swami said on Thursday morning, the day is important for all devotees of Krishna. In India, Janmasmi is like the Christmas in the West. The 25 people present for the morning program glanced at each other in anticipation. I had no idea that the day was the equivalent of Christmas in India. I'm writing this from a first-person perspective. And judging from the looks of the others, they hadn't known either. To celebrate Janmashtami, the Swami said, devotees dedicate the whole day to Krishna. We will have kirtan all day. This was unannounced and completely unknown to almost everyone present except the Prabhupada, of course. Kirtan sometimes means chanting with instruments, sometimes speaking, sometimes reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Kirtan means glorifying the Lord. So all of this is kirtan. So we will sing for half an hour, Hare Krishna. Then I shall speak half an hour. And then we will chant on beads half an hour. In this way, we continue whole day. Also, we shall fast whole day up till midnight. And at midnight, we can eat. In this way, we will minimize our bodily needs so we have more time for kirtan. I suddenly felt apprehension. It was only 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't know if I can do that, I whispered to Jan. That's almost 18 hours away. I'm going to have to eat something today. You can't. He said we have to fast all day. I don't care. I'm eating. And so the day began. The Swami gave a lecture about the significance of the day. Today is the most auspicious day, he said. On this day, Lord Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago in Mathura. Mathura is about 90 miles south of Delhi. It is still there, eternally existing. You can still visit there today. Krishna appeared in the home of his maternal uncle, Kamsa, in a very precarious situation. He was born in prison cell. Kamsa had imprisoned Krishna's mother and father because their child was prophesied to kill him. God's birth in this world is not like our birth. No, as long as we are in this material world, we must cycle through all the various species of life according to our karma. So Krishna's birth is not like that. Krishna does not require mother and father to appear. He is within your heart. He is everywhere. So he can appear from everywhere. Just like the sun rises from the eastern side, it does not see that eastern side is the mother of the sun. We simply see that sun is rising from the eastern side. So Krishna appears within this material world due to his kindness to his devotees. Nobody is real father and mother of Krishna, because Krishna is the original father of everyone. But when Krishna comes here, advance, he accepts some devotees as his father, as his mother. So why does Krishna advance? In Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. My dear Arjuna, I come when there is discrepancy in the process of religion. What process of religion does Krishna recommend? Simply surrender unto him. Krishna advanced to teach us this lesson. You are immortal by nature. As spirit soul, you are part and parcel of me. I am also immortal. So you are immortal because you are unnecessarily trying to be happy in this material world. Krishna is the original person. We should try to understand him, why he advents, why he comes to this material world, what is his business, what are his activities. And we try to understand him. What is the result? The result is that we achieve liberation from this material world. That is the aim of this life. After the Swami's class, we chanted with instruments, then listened to the Swami again, then chanted on our beads. The time passed quickly, but by noon I was getting restless. My legs hurt, I complained to Jan. I've been sitting cross-legged for 5 hours. Then get up, she said. I stood at the back of the room and listened to the Swami speak. He had been talking about Krishna. But about 12:30 p.m., he started to talk about his own guru. I heard him talk only very briefly about his spiritual master before, and I'd never heard how he had met him. In 1874, my spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, was born, Swami said. And then, in 1918, my Guru Maharaj started with his mission. He called it Gaudiya Math, and he was trying to spread it. I was taken to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati by one of my friends. I did not want to go there, but he forcibly took me there. Yes, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati ordered me, you preach the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in English language. This is very much essential. So, on the first meeting, he told me like that. At that time, I was in favor of Gandhi's movement. So I said that we are not independent, we are subjugated. Who will hear about our message? But he refuted my argument. This so-called nationalism, he said, or any ism, they are all temporary. Real need is the self-realization. So I was convinced. But at that time, although he wanted me to immediately join him and spread the movement, at that time I was a married man, a young man. I was married in 1918. And I also had a son at that time, 1921. I met my Guru Maharaj in 1922. At that time, I was manager in a big chemical factory. So I thought that I am a married man. I have many responsibilities. How can I join immediately? It is not my duty. Of course, that was my mistake. I should have joined immediately. I should have taken the opportunity immediately. Then, in 1954, when I was 58 years, I left home and I was living alone. Then, that year, I accepted the renounced order, sannyas, and I decided to take up the responsibility of my Guru Maharaj. Then, when I was 70 years old, I decided, now I must go, I must do, and execute the order of my Guru Maharaj to preach Krishna consciousness in the English language. So I came here to New York 1 year ago. I was not very much hopeful because it is a very difficult task because this culture is so opposed in European and Western culture. I used to walk on 42nd Street near the cinema houses. When I first came, I had no money. I came by ship. So when I was on the ship seeing New York for the first time, I was thinking, why have I come here? I do not know what is the purpose, because how will the people accept this movement? They are differently educated, and as soon as I will say, so my dear sir, you have to give up meat eating and illicit sex and no intoxication and gambling, they will say, please go home. But I thought, let me try. I was practically just like a homeless man, but I had full faith that my Guru Maharaj was with me. I never lost this faith. If you accept Bhagavad Gita as it is, then you should know that Krishna is present before you in his words in the Bhagavad Gita. This is called spiritual realization. It is not mundane historical incidences. Now I am trying my level best to execute the order of my Guru Maharaj. Simply, if you will also try your level best on the same principle, then it will go on. Same principle. It doesn't matter whether one is born in India or outside India. No, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Priti Vityache Jata Nagarani Gram. As many towns and cities and villages are there, our name will be sung. He did not say it to make a farce. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So sometimes I am very much criticized that I have foreigners as followers, but caste Brahmins in India, they are very much against me. You may be a very learned scholar, or you may be a fool. It doesn't matter. You are under the laws of material nature. We have got this human form of life. It will be finished, as the cats and dogs' life is also finished. But if we try through the Guru and Vaishnavas, the followers of Vishnu, that is Krishna, then we can achieve in this life full success, not failure, like cats and dogs' life. That is the opportunity. The Swami looked out at his audience. If you can't fast all day, then you can eat some sugar candy, he said. And he picked up his small African drum and began to chant. Jan looked over her shoulder at me and got up and came back and came to the back of the room. How are you feeling? She asked me. Pretty terrible, I answered. I don't think I can make it. What the hell is sugar candy? Asked Charlie the flute player, was leaning against the wall next to me. Damned if I know, I said. Maybe he means rock candy. Does it matter? Anything will do. The Swami said, if we can't fast all day, dot, dot, dot. Let's get some, he interrupted. I can't make it till midnight either. I feel sick. I'll go, Jan said. I don't feel that bad. I'll get it. I need some air anyway. Okay, You got money? Okay, go. But don't be long, we're dying in here. It was an hour and a half later when she came back with 3 packets of lifesavers. That sugar candy? I asked. Charlie looked skeptical. Well, it's sugar, and it's candy, she shot back. They'd never heard of rock candy. That's the clear crystal sugary stuff, I think. They said I'd have to go to Midtown and look around. They thought a place called Stover's on 53rd Street might have it. But I'm too weak to hunt for it. And the bus to Midtown is just too much today. It's hot out. Here you go. Sitting cross-legged on the rug, I quietly broke open one of the lifesaver packs. I hope the person sitting in front of me obscured me from the Swami's view. Pretended I was scratching my face and eased a yellow lemon-flavored one into my mouth as inconspicuously as possible. I passed a red one to Charlie, who did the same. The sugar candy perked us up a bit, and before I knew it, the afternoon had passed, and it was 7 o'clock. The heat had become unbearable, and it was starting to get dark. We had been in the temple with the Swami for 12 hours straight. About 8:30, 2 Indian couples in their 30s arrived at the temple. They opened the door without knocking and sat down cross-legged on the floor as if they had been invited and were supposed to be there. The men were dressed in Western clothing, black pants and sports jackets, but the women wore brightly colored saris. From his seat at the head of the temple, the Swami smiled and nodded to them. They nodded back. The Swami said something loud to them in Hindi, and one of the men replied in an equally loud voice. Then, unexpectedly, the Swami turned to us. So I would like to invite the young devotees of Krishna present here to speak some of their realizations of Krishna consciousness. Ray, can you speak something about Krishna consciousness, what you have realized? Ray looked surprised, and his face went white. After about half a minute and 3 loud throat clears, he said, well, I like the philosophy, and I like the atmosphere too. I think I'd like to dedicate myself more to Krishna. I'm not the body, and heat and cold can't affect me like they used to. This chanting is a way of life. I'm not the body, and materialism is not good for us. I think who wants to get high can do it without drugs by chanting. Well, it makes you feel good, and it's legal. That's what I like about it. Also, it doesn't cost anything. That's another good thing about it. He nodded his head, looking straight at the Swami, signaling that his speech was over. Then the Swami looked at Charlie. Mr. Charlie, speak something about your realizations of Krishna consciousness. After a long silence, Charlie swallowed and closed his eyes like the Swami did. He said, well, I'm not a very good speaker, but anyway, Krishna consciousness is, you know, a way to be peaceful inside. You don't have to look for a place. I mean outside, yourself. You're not the body, so that's it. Yeah, you can be satisfied. Yeah, satisfied. To know you don't have to get, you know, all worked up. I mean, to do anything. He opened his eyes, looked around at the audience, then at the Swami, and then at the round picture of Radha and Krishna on the wall, and then back to the Swami. Then he closed his eyes again. It's like being peaceful all the time. So chanting, you know, does it. I think it'll work okay for anyone. I mean, anyone who tries it. So we're not these bodies. That's what it is, you know. So if everyone tries it, you know, it works. You have to try it. Though, I mean, don't be afraid. Just try and you'll see. You know, it really works. And I think, well, that's it. Put his head down and looked at the floor. Miss Denise, can you speak something about Krishna consciousness? Me? Denise was about 16 and had been coming to the Swami's evening program for the past week or so. She looked over her left shoulder at the Indian guests sitting on the rug. They were expressionless. Well, if you chant, It's hard to stop. I mean, you shouldn't stop. It makes your thinking clearer. And you can even see better, I think. So, I mean, if your heart is in it, you can chant every day and have anything you want. Inside, I mean. I guess it's hard at first, you know, but you have to hear the Swami speak. You'll feel better, more at ease. Slowly, I mean more comfortable, you know. It's a nice way to spend free time instead of trying to do things when you don't know what's really going to happen, you know, like drugs and stuff. The Swami smiled at her. Thank you very much, he said. Please don't pick me. Please not me, I thought. I would request our guests to speak, he said. One of the Indian men smoothed his mustache and spoke in English with a thick Indian accent. We were walking down the street and looked in window and thought I was in India. So we walked in. We're in Indian Merchant Marines. I am captain. Our ship is Golconda. We have ship in New York. He paused. I can say some Gita shlokas, he said, like he was making a suggestion, shlokas. The Swami raised his chin and said, so recite? Staring at the Swami, the man waited a few seconds, looked at the ceiling, and then started singing verses. Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, he sang. And he continued for several minutes, chanting what I thought was an impressive number of verses by heart. He sang the same melody for each verse. Being a musician, I took note of that melody. It was a tetrachord, the first four notes of a major scale. I thought of it as part of the tradition I should be learning. His singing was melodious and heartfelt. It seemed to me as though a piece of India had suddenly been brought into our midst and was right here in the room between the Swami and these people. I realized for the first time how the philosophy the Swami was teaching was not just a philosophy, but was a culture. Krishna consciousness was not just the ideas of one person, the Swami, but was something greater. It wasn't just about God and the spiritual world. It was a way of life, and that was embraced by an entire civilization. As I listened to the man sing, India seemed less mysterious and less unknown. And at that moment, I knew that I would go there. The man paused and looked at the Swami. Some of the devotees had turned around to stare at him. He resumed his chanting, and after about five more minutes, he nodded at the Swami and stopped. Thank you very much, said the Swami, beaming at his visitors. I had forgotten all about my gnawing hunger, and I knew I would make it through the last few hours till midnight. So that was the first Janmasthami. And then the third Janmasthami took place in Montreal. I'm going to read a bit about that. The morning of Janmasthami, I was filled with nostalgia, remembering our first Janmasthami in New York 2 years earlier. As I sat and listened to the Swami speak in Montreal temple room, I looked around at all the new devotees' faces and thought how different this celebration was to that first festival. Not only were there more people, there were more committed people who were dedicated to helping the Swami spread Krishna consciousness. I took in the paintings on the walls, the large temple room, and the Swami's beautiful seat. This all served as evidence to me that the seeds the Swami had planted were flowering. I knew, of course, that the movement had grown dramatically, but now I felt as if I was seeing it for myself. We were celebrating the birth of Lord Krishna in another country, but for me, this day was also about celebrating the Swami's achievements. The format of the Janmasthami observation was to be the same as the New York one in June. Fasting all day, chanting with instruments, listening to the Swami speak, and chanting individually on our beads. This was to continue until midnight. Then we would have a special aarti ceremony for the deities, followed by the feast. And as in New York, there was an initiation ceremony with many new devotees receiving their beads and Sanskrit names from the Swami. The six of us were awarded second initiation, Brahman initiation, which I remember the Swami mentioning at my first initiation ceremony. He gave us a sacred mantra, which he called Gayatri, and which he said we should memorize and chant three times a day at sunrise, noon, and sunset. The Swami stayed in the temple room with everyone for a good part of the day, chanting with us and speaking about Krishna. God's senses, Krishna's senses, are not limited, he said. Just like I can see with my eyes, but Krishna can also eat with his eyes. He is within your heart. He is everywhere. So he can appear from everywhere. Just like the sun rises from the eastern side, it does not mean that eastern side is the mother of the sun. We simply see that the sun is rising from the eastern side. This way, if we try to understand in truth, then we can understand what is God. Superficially, we try to understand by our experimental knowledge, then it is not possible to understand God. Of course, this Janamashtami ceremony is observed by all Hindus, irrespective of becoming Krishna follower or not. This ceremony is observed in India and in every home. Just like in your Western countries, the Christmas is observed in every home. Similarly, Janamashtami is observed in every home. Today is a great ceremonial day. So today we should offer prayers to Krishna. The other religious sects, just like the Christians, they offer prayer. The Mohammedans, they offer prayer. So offering prayer is also one of the items of bhakti, devotion. So I shall invite all of you today to speak about Krishna, he said, my heart sung. All this was a trip down memory lane, and this time I was pretty sure I wouldn't be able to get out of it. The Swami was looking around the room, so I shall request Janardhan to speak something about his realization of Krishna. Inside, I shut out whatever Janardhan was saying so that I could mentally prepare my speech. Then I found an old receipt in my wallet, and I jotted down a few ideas with the leaky red pen that I had found in my pocket. My face felt hot. I glanced over my shoulder and saw that the room was full of people, devotees, interested Canadian guests, and many Indian-born Hindus. So we should try to chant Hare Krishna as much as we can, Janardhan was concluding. I guess that's my main realization, Hare Krishna. The Swami nodded at him and asked a young Texan devotee, Gorsundar, to speak, then Yamuna, then Janaki. The devotees spoke lofty philosophy, borrowing many of the Swami's phrases. I was surprised that they sounded so elevated, so eloquent, so persuasive, despite being relative newcomers. I could imagine them speaking with any professor, any philosopher, any penetrating intellectual. My confidence was dwindling. Whatever I said was going to be redundant and anticlimactic. Let him speak, the Swami said, turning in my direction, Mukunda. I cleared my throat and looked out at the darkening sky, my face burning. Well, I said, I offer my respectful obeisances to our spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta Swami, who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter unto his lotus feet. I swallowed hard and looked at the wall. The Krishna consciousness movement is intended to make a solution to our everyday problems, I said after a long pause. It's not a kind of place where people just come because there's some religious rites being performed. Everyone in this age is thinking that I am free, but actually I am not free. I am very bound up. We're strictly bound up by the stringent laws of nature. In every status of life, I have to serve somebody, or something, or my own body. In every status of life, I have to serve my wife, or I have to serve my children. I have to serve my pet. I have to serve my work, my boss, my associates. I heard myself repeating phrases I'd heard the Swami use. Bound up, stringent, status, and serve were not words that I used, not in public, speaking, not in writing, and certainly not in casual conversation. If I'm very wealthy, very elevated, or very beautiful physically, I continued, even then I always have to serve somebody. If nothing else, one has to serve one's own stomach. I have to eat. I have to get food. I have to serve my stomach. So I am not free at all. I have to do these things. There's no way I can stop. If I don't eat, I will die. So our natural position as a living entity is that we have to serve something. That's our natural position. If something is wrong with my hand and I want to be cured, I don't grab onto some foodstuffs or some medicine, some herbs, and squeeze them with the hand and think that this hand is going to be nourished or cured. I take the medicine or the food through my mouth, and then it circulates through the digestive system and through the blood and finally comes to the hand. So the hand, unless it's serving its source, is useless. The servant must serve the master, or the part must serve the whole. And our relationship with God is the same. Just like the hand is made out of mucus, bile, and air, flesh, and bone, as all the body is. It is just stool. I like this example, and it always made me laugh inside. Bile, stool, and mucus were terms I knew Ayurvedic medical practitioners used, words that the Swami used also to describe human physiology. I never used the word stool before I met the Swami, except maybe in a doctor's office or in the word stool pigeon. I glanced back and saw the young suited, man, this is something that I wrote up before, looking blankly toward me and from the other end of the room. But we're made of spirit. I rushed on, promising myself that I wouldn't look back again. Qualitatively, we're the same as Krishna, but quantitatively, we're many millions of times smaller. Qualitatively, the same. Quantitatively, different. So if we're fragmental portions, separated parts and parcels, then we can serve the source or the whole, and we can be cured of this material disease, which is rampant nowadays. And this is possible only by mercy. I glanced over at the Swami. His eyes were closed, his face expressionless. He looked at me like he was listening intently. I felt like I had become a mouthpiece transmitting information rather than being any kind of original teacher. So simply by hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, we can immediately get some relief from this material existence. Just like when we were chanting here, you could feel some ecstasy. Well, this ecstasy goes on unlimitedly and infinitely, eternally. If one takes to it, it's always eternal, ever increasing. Just like the relationship between ourselves and our spiritual master is eternal and ever increasing, our relationship with God is the same. So please try to realize that this is a very serious movement, and we're not asking you to sign up or pay us anything, but simply to sincerely try it, and you'll immediately feel some benefit. I was done. I looked at the Swami, but he was already scanning the room for his next speaker. I breathed a sigh of relief. Nanda Kishore, the Swami was saying, say something about your realization of Krishna consciousness. Nanda Kishore scrutinized his hands, turning them over as if examining them for forensic evidence. His orange t-shirt and yellow dhoti were splattered with cooking stains. I knew he'd been cooking a lot today, every day. There was a long pause, and I thought perhaps he hadn't heard the Swami. He had been fasting all day, so maybe he just zoned out. Then he glanced up at the Swami. Well, I like to spend time doing service in the kitchen, he said, in a voice so soft I could hardly hear him, especially rolling chapatis. For the guests that don't know, chapatis are round Indian pancakes made of wheat flour. I make them every day for the devotees instead of bread. This is really weird, I thought. Why is he talking about food instead of philosophy? We can make them out of whole meal flour, he muttered, continuing his flatbread soliloquy. You roll them in a circle and then put them over a flame and they inflate like a balloon. There were a few giggles in the audience. Anyway, if I have nothing else to do for the rest of my life, I would be happy to continue rolling chapatis for Krishna. Whatever we can do for Krishna, whatever talent we can offer, Krishna will accept that service and give us complete satisfaction. I looked over at him. It looked like he was recalling the happiest moment of his life. Chapati rolling suddenly took on a new meaning. The service he did, something I thought to be tedious, was his way of pleasing Krishna. I realized at that moment that devotional service could be varied. It wasn't limited to the frontline type of work I thought I was doing. Nanda Kishore was speaking philosophy after all, exclamation point. And his heartfelt talk made more of an impression upon me than any other speech that evening. About 10 o'clock, a stocky Indian man with white hair entered the temple and stood at the foyer at the top of the entry stairs. Under his suit, the collar of his shirt was open, giving him a slovenly demeanor. The Swami watched him as he walked toward the guest's shoes, which were lined up in pairs against the wall. He appeared to scan the pairs and then pick up the Swami's white shoes It curled up a little at the toes. I was puzzled. What was he doing with the Swami's shoes? Looking straight at the Swami, he banged the shoes together sideways two or three times. A cloud of dust rose and formed a puffball and then faded into the air as it fell to the ground, to the floor. The Swami broke into a huge smile and nodded enthusiastically at the man, who grinned toothlessly back at him. The man took off his own shoes and sat on the floor close to the Swami's seat. And while everyone else silently watched the Swami and the man conversed in Hindi, the Swami and the man conversed in Hindi for a few minutes. I didn't understand what had just happened between them, but I assumed it involved something. I assumed it involved something to do with Vedic etiquette of some kind. I knew that it was traditional for a holy man's shoes to be respected, and it was a gesture of humility to touch them, although I wouldn't have dared to. Just before midnight, a group of Gujarati Indian women appeared, carrying sticks, and dressed identically in red sequin saris. I thought they looked like a soccer team. Who are they? I asked the man standing next to me. What are the sticks for? They are dancers, he said. They will dance the Rasa Garba dance. You know it? I shook my head. Often it is performed on Janmashtami, he told me. I wondered what the Swami would have to say about choreographed dancing in the temple. In general, he was very traditional, so I doubted he would approve. But when the Swami saw them, he beckoned them to come forward. One woman plugged in a small cassette player and pressed the play button. A melodious Gujarati song rang out in the temple, and the women began to dance in graceful, symmetrical movements, touching their sticks together as they whirled past one another. Their red skirts rustled as they rose and fell in small waves. The Swami nodded to the beat of the music and smiled throughout the whole 15-minute performance. Very good. Thank you very much, he exclaimed at the end. The sequined women gathered around his seat, and they had an animated group conversation in Hindi until it was time for the midnight aarti ceremony. The room was filled to capacity, mostly by Indian guests dressed in all their finery, heavy jeweled saris, dripping gold jewelry, and opulent Punjabi outfits. The singing of 100 throats filled the candle-lit room as the deity's curtains opened for the aarti. The Swami stood before the altar to perform the ceremony, holding 3 incense sticks in his right hand. He made big clockwise circles to offer the incense to the deities. In his left hand, he rang a small silver bell. The Swami offered other articles, a burning cotton wick dipped in clarified butter, sitting in a small bronze holder, water in a conch shell and a handkerchief, fresh flowers, a yak tail fan, and a peacock feather fan, and then blew 3 long blasts on a conch shell to indicate the end of the ceremony. Everyone took their places in parallel lines on the temple floor. After a long day of fasting, it was finally time to serve the beautiful Janmashtami feast, which included Nandakishore's celebrated Shabbat. Hare Krishna. So, I don't know what the time frame is like, but if you want to say anything or ask anything, now's the time to do it. I guess I should probably wait about a minute so you can think of, yes, things to say. From what I understand, I may be wrong about this, but I'm a little out of the loop, but I think the GBC passed a resolution this year or last year saying that the feasts after Janmashtami should be a Ekadasi feast. Before that, it was a varied. In different temples, they would do different things. Some would have grains, some would not have grains. And I think in this temple, no grains have been served for a long time, maybe since the very beginning, I don't know.
In the early days, we had grain feasts.
In the early days, according to Virabhata, there were grain feasts. But now, apparently, all feasts, especially after Janmashtami, are Ekadasi feasts.
Quotes from the Muslim preacher, and you quote some. something to control it. Obviously, we had something in mind in connection with the anniversary.
Yeah, I'm sorry, what did you want me to say?
Sorry?
What did you want me to say?
Just elaborate on those quotes. You didn't elaborate on those quotes.
But Prabhupada was saying about Krishna?
No. That even before you started speaking about the Gnostics, you were saying about that Martin Hahn was stressing the importance of
integration. Stressing the importance of?
Integration in this society.
Oh. Yeah, I was just mentioning that I saw a video of I think he's somewhat renowned, of Mohammedan cleric saying that he wanted the people of the Mohammedan faith to integrate into society, to not be act as they were, you know, in a separate sort of existence. It didn't have anything to do or any concerns about what was going on in their respective countries. And in this regard, I think I said something about the fact that there was a Radhiyatra card in the Banana Festival parade, which took place on Saturday. And that was an example of devotees integrating more into society. So I think that's a very good thing. Like the thing that the organization that you're doing, Spiritually United Nations, is a way of showing that Hare Krishnas can be integrated. We're not just a separate society. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, as I remember, there weren't so many people that were born in India taking place. They were mostly American people, white-skinned people. And then that, it was a way of integrating, of showing that the Krishna consciousness could take root. And, of course they were alternatives, they were hippies, but that it could take root among young people of a different culture. So that's what I was trying to get at, that it's important to be integrated into society in a sense. But in another sense, Prabhupada was always very, very uncompromising and very, singular and aloof from society. When in the very beginning, when he was incorporating ISKCON in 1966, making a corporation in New York, I think he wanted to call it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and I wanted to call it the International Society for God Consciousness. But he stuck with the word Krishna, and that became very well known, and Hare Krishna has become a sort of household term. I always thought that Gobardhana Puja was a very internal kind of celebration. I guess it's the biggest or one of the biggest celebrations here in New Gobardhana. But actually that was also a very integral part of society, because the idea that there's a food shortage in the world, and one of the themes of Gobardhana Puja can be that there is enough for everybody, that people are just very greedy. And I think Prabhupada said in one lecture that there's a lot of empty space, especially he mentioned Australia, of course a lot of it's desert, but he was talking about Africa, and I've noticed this in the use to fly back and forth in an airplane across the United States, that there's a lot of space in the United States that is unpopulated. And in this lecture, Prabhupada was saying that the world could be 10 times the present population if all the land were properly utilized. A lot of land is used for growing soybeans to feed animals, and a lot of it's used for growing tobacco, a lot of it's used for nefarious purposes, for cash crops, for sugar. I gave a talk once in Fiji, and was saying how in Fiji they're growing a lot of sugar cane. They're exporting it because it brings in a lot of money. It's a very warm climate there, and so they can grow a lot of sugar cane all over the island. But I was staying at the home of the Punjas. The Punjas are a family of Gujaratis who are one of the wealthiest families in the country. And they have a big sugar factory. And so I sort of had to sort of backtrack because I was staying with them. And their way of justifying what they do is they speak of Vairagya. Okay, we're making money, but we're building temples and we're using it for Krishna. So in a way, they have a good point. Anyway, that's a little bit of an aberration. So I think we'll stop now. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Dharma.
Hare.
It's all about the good of our
deeds.